throwing back. Touchdown! Whiteholt with the kill. And Warner wins the set. Fade away by Moores.
In play with Pragmatic, made possible by Horton in Britain. A worldwide supplier of engine cooling systems and proud member of the community for more than four decades. HortonWW.com. Welcome to another edition of In Play. I'm Craig Matic. Well, the last name of today's guest is synonymous with the sport of tennis in South Dakota. The family's been involved with tennis for over 50 years. Mom and dad, seven children, all involved with tennis and all pretty good at it. Today's guest, the oldest of those seven kids, he spent hours as a kid hitting a tennis ball against the garage door or the house. He won a tennis singles title as a senior at Rapid City Central, went on to play college, and the father of two very successful tennis players. And now he's a teaching tennis pro. He's the owner of Rapid City's premier tennis facility. He's also in the South Dakota Tennis Hall of Fame. He's the Rapid City Cobbler, the South Dakota Tech Hard Rocker, and the New Mexico Lobo, Daryl Pollack. Daryl, welcome to EM Play.
Well, thank you. That was a good introduction.
You know, that 98-cent tennis racket you bought at the age of 14 has certainly paid off to where you are today, Daryl.
Oh, it was so amazing that, you know, to go down to the hardware store and find something so cheap that it sure didn't last very long.
Well, your mom and dad, Minnie and Joe, I mean, they raised seven kids there in Rapid City. Your dad was a barber. Your mom was in the medical field. Where did the love of tennis come from, though, from your parents?
You know what? My parents were so incredible. They let us kids kind of hang around and do what we want, and we all were into sports. But when I was 14, I decided at that point that I needed a sport, and I got hit in the eye with a baseball, so that ended my baseball career. I really had a good arm, throwing arm. And so when I was looking for another sport, I found a badminton at first. And so we played badminton and it was a riot with the neighbors. And so my friend said, let's go play tennis. And as soon as I grabbed a racket and went out there, I knew it was a sport that I could do on my own. And I had a lot of siblings that could come out there with me. The place was a couple blocks from our house, South Junior High. They had three courts. They had a backboard. And so at that point, it was all over. During the summer, there wasn't much to do. So I'd just go out there and hang around that backboard at South Junior High. And then I would generally get one of my sisters to play and then another sister. And then finally Duke would come out and Donna and Darcy would play a little bit and Dixie. So yeah, we had everybody playing and Dana. So I had players to play with, but I was so bad that I needed something to, you know, keep me focused. And that was that backboard or the house or the wall, any wall I could find. School buildings were awesome just to hit against.
I heard you checked out library books on tennis.
Yeah, so what I had is I had a little bit of reading disability, so I couldn't read very well, so I really didn't read much until I found tennis. And at that point, I went to the library, and I figured out with this passion thing with tennis that I picked up all the books and tried to understand them and tried to figure out tennis. And yeah, it was awesome. There were so many books back then because tennis in the 70s was a bigger sport than golf. And, you know, we didn't have soccer here. There was no hockey. There were no other team sports. And the girls' sports, there weren't very many of those at all. So tennis, kind of everybody played back then. And it was nice because I could read the books and then I could go to the wall and hit and try out all the stuff I needed to try.
By the way, did you ever return those books Back to the library? Just curious.
Oh, yeah. Oh, boy. I ended up buying a few of them at the bookstore, too. But, yeah, that was a great learning experience for me to pick up the reading part, but also the passion and the interest in tennis. Just, it got me so far because I was terrible at school because of the reading stuff. So I knew I had to find a sport. And when I was in kindergarten, in first grade, I won so many marble games with marbles. And then we went into tetherball, and I was good at tetherball and baseball. And so I knew I liked the sports. I didn't care much for school, but the tennis really did keep me going. And mom and dad both had mom had a eighth grade education. I think my dad had a seventh from North Dakota. So for them to help us with a lot of this stuff, they were just so busy with seven kids at home watching everybody and working that they let us do whatever we wanted to. So like we kind of got everybody else going into the tennis scene at that point.
So how many matches do you suppose Joe and Minnie watched with all you kids playing tennis?
Oh, yeah, they were all over the place. They were down to New Mexico to watch me in Albuquerque and Dolly, Dana and Donna in Las Cruces. They all three went there and at college and stuff. Yeah, so they had their share of matches. What they enjoyed were all the trophies we had. We had a special room in the basement where we had hundreds and hundreds of tennis trophies that all the kids had picked up.
I heard over 500 trophies.
Oh, man, there's so many. That's all we were doing. Everybody wanted trophies, and we just fill it up. Yeah, it was crazy.
So, Daryl, tennis really did not come natural for you. You really had to work hard on it. So when you're at Rapid City High School, who was your coach, and what was your coach trying to work with you?
Well, it was Coach Herrick, and he was an ex-football coach. That's what you usually get sometimes for some of these sports back then. And he didn't know much of tennis, but he was good at trying to set up the matches and getting the people playing. And so he knew he had never had a state champion. He had his two sons that played on the high school team. He had never had a state champion. So his whole goal when I was there was to try to get a state champion. And there he got it at number two singles my senior year. So then finally, you know, Duke came around and Duke won the state high school and tennis and won the state high school basketball championship, I think the same year too. So he pulled off a few more sporting wins than I did.
How would you describe your high school tennis career?
You know, everybody would be driving by South Junior High and they'd see me hitting against the wall. And they would go, that guy is crazy. You know, what is he doing? Because I couldn't beat anybody. And so my sophomore year, I didn't even go to state.
Oh.
And they only took four players for state back then. And now they take six for singles and three doubles teams sometimes. But they only took four. So I played Mike Bridge for fourth place, and nobody wanted me to go on the team anyway because I was so terrible. So I tried that hard for that match, but after that, he never beat me, and I was beating mostly everybody on the team. I could beat the number one guy, but the coach wanted a state champion at number two, so he got it that year from me.
So it was your senior year. It's 1974. The state tennis tournament is in Sioux Falls. You're playing flight two singles. You beat Gaffney of Lincoln in the first round. And then you beat Rich Robb of Vermilion in the semis. What were you thinking at that time, knowing that you were heading on to the finals?
Yeah, you know, I was always focused on one point. So I never did look further than trying to go out on the court and figure out how to win those points after points after points. So I was surprised in all the way up because I never thought that I had a chance to pull it off, but it was just every point was match point and I went through it and it worked.
Well, it was Don Boyd of Aberdeen Central in the finals there in flight two, your senior year. What do you remember the most about that match against Boyd? Had you played Don a number of times over the years?
I did. I did play him, and I think I had some wins over him, so I was pretty confident. And again, not being in a position where I was thinking about losing or anything like that, just playing point after point, I didn't get nervous, and I held him off and pulled it off. So it was a big, big win for me and for the coach.
Well, were you thinking maybe tennis in college? Was that something that you wanted to do? I mean, knowing you hadn't racked up a lot of titles on anything, I mean, were schools looking for you?
That was the whole thing. There was a guy, Marty Johnson, that I played as a junior, and he beat me 6-0, 6-0. He was a college player. And I thought, wow, if I could ever play college, you know, this Marty guy was just so phenomenal. But what happened was I asked, my dad had mentioned to me, he said, do you want to go out and you know, go to college for 4 years, or would you rather go work and make a lot of money? And then in those 4 years, those college kids are going to be in debt, and here you'll have all this money. So I looked at him, and I thought, I had worked at McDonald's and got fired after 2 months because I was going on tennis trips. And I worked at the hospital doing dishes. So I said, no way. And I got lucky and I applied for the School of Mines. And, you know, the coach really wanted me. So Eklund, I played 1 year for Coach Eklund. And actually, his second year, he was going to give me a scholarship. I think it was $100 a semester, and I was paying $700. And I thought, no, I don't want to play another NAIA, because I won conference and districts and went to the Nationals that year in Kansas City. So I thought, I'll take a semester off. And that's where I checked out the schools in Arizona and New Mexico and actually California and Utah. Those were the places that we took two cars, and a friend of mine and I went around and checked out the colleges. So
yeah, you chose New Mexico. What was the deal with the Lobos?
You know, the deal with the Lobos was Linda Capriva and I were the same grade. And Dolly, my sister, would play Linda in high school all the time. And Linda would usually win. So Linda went to New Mexico, and I went and played for School of Mines. So when she was down there, she was kind of bugging me a little bit. And then when I finished up my first year, she said, come on down and check us out. And so when I went down to New Mexico, to Albuquerque, they had an All-American that made it to the finals of the NCAA tournament. And so they were better than the Arizona schools. And they had, you know, wins over Utah and some California schools. So I thought, you know, that was a good school. And when I checked out the other schools, nothing compared. And Linda just kept bugging me and bugging me. So that's what drew me down there. And yeah, it really paid off.
Well, what was your college career like at New Mexico and tennis?
You know, I had to redshirt a semester. And so, and then after that, I got scholarships. But it was really fun because we had that All-American there with us for 1 year. And then there was another guy, Dave Getz, who played college tennis for Las Cruces for New Mexico State. And he was down there while I was playing with the Lobos in Albuquerque. And he thought, geez, if Daryl's up there, I'm going to go up there. So he switched schools and he played for us. And so Dave Getz was from North Dakota and I was from South Dakota. So it was awesome to have two Dakotas on the same team. And the coach gave us credit for if we could beat the New Mexico kids and all the other ones trying out. He let us play. And so we got to play. I played probably between 3 and 6 most of the time, and usually 2 or 3 doubles. I wasn't really high, but we got to travel all over the place. We had a guy from Sweden, a guy from Denmark. We had a guy from Florida that was a crazy guy. And so it was a year where they had a lot of the foreigners were coming out from all over the place playing college tennis.
You know, you told me in high school, even before high school, you weren't very good. But what made you better to be able to play college tennis?
You know, it was all those walls I hit against and all the books I read. And I just knew that if I would go and practice and hit more balls than everybody else, it has to do with the number of balls you hit. It doesn't have to do really with your athleticism as much as going out and practicing and practicing. So when I had a passion, I mean, I was on that court 24/7 playing everybody. And so I knew at the point when I went to the School of Mines and won all those matches, I knew at that point that I could play higher level college tennis. And I didn't have anything else to do but check it out. And I, you know, just so lucky that it came to fruition.
What was your major while you were at New Mexico?
Well, it's so funny because I was majoring in engineering, of course, from the School of Mines. And it was the easiest engineering major at the time, which was mining. So then I went to New Mexico and I continued with it for another semester and ended up taking a physics class. And I walked into the physics class and I didn't understand one word they said. And I was like, whoa. So I found out it was physics two that I was in the class for, not physics one.
Uh-huh.
And at that point, I dropped physics two, and then I passed Cal two, and I thought, geez, I'm going to go into something else a little easier. So at that point, I made the switch to finance and had a minor in economics. Then after I graduated, I went back and got all my accounting courses. So,
So then that helped you moving back to South Dakota, moving to Pierre, and working for the Department of Revenue, right? That's what you did?
That's what it worked right into play. And I actually spent $100 for the CPA exam and when I was in New Mexico and there was a big tennis tournament and I said, forget the CPA exam. And I never looked back at it. So, but the accounting really helped out with, the Department of Revenue for the state was a really interesting, fun job. And we worked with special taxes. So I worked in bank franchise and oil severance tax and liquor taxes. There were only two of us doing those taxes. So it was a little crazy.
I think I'd rather play tennis.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's where I did play a lot of tennis in Pierre. Every weekend I'd go to some tournaments around. But yeah.
Well, then it's that point in time in your life, Daryl, that you started giving tennis lessons. So how did you get into that and what made you decide that, maybe you want to give some lessons?
Well, I started in Rapid. I actually worked for the Rapid City Rec Department and helped them a little bit. I was doing a little part-time teaching for them. And then when I finished up and I had all that knowledge from those books, I thought, what the heck? I'll get certified. So I got a certification for USPTA for Teaching Pro, and then I just started teaching on the side. And at that point, I really enjoyed the people, and I hated the auditing stuff. With I had a clip-on tie and the suit jacket, and it was too much. So it was nice when I moved back to Rapid City and did a little bit more auditing with the sales and use tax and excise tax, and then got into the tennis scene full blast.
Well, it was about 1986. You've been doing, the work of about 5 years working with the Department of Revenue. You move back to Rapid, and there's a point in time you decided, maybe full-time teaching, giving tennis lessons. That's actually what you were thinking?
You know what? Woody Corner had the Howard Johnsons and they had two indoor courts. So when that job opened up and then Arrowhead had two outdoor courts, I thought, whoa, if I could teach tennis and do it full time with the indoor courts that Woody Corner had during the winter and then out at Arrowhead, I thought that would be the best thing I could ever do. So I quit the job at the Department of Revenue and started off with those two jobs. And I also had a soccer store that had tennis supplies. So we were selling tennis in a soccer store at one point too. So I had that going at the same time.
Well, you know, you got to learn to be a tennis player. And do you have to learn to be a tennis coach or a tennis pro? How did you get ready to be able to become a professional tennis teacher?
Once you are out there teaching tennis and you teach a lot of beginners that know nothing, you know you can teach. And then at that point, you take it another step and you try to do groups, and then you try to do a little bit of high school kids that are better. And then you get into the college scene while you're better than everybody else. So they look up to you. And so you're able to see what they're doing because you went through all those mistakes way back and you read all the books and you're certified. So they enjoy you on the court, and you know the drills, you know all the stuff, and you just continue and learn every year and get better and better.
Well, Daryl, you took another big step in your career in 2003. You opened up your own business. You opened up the Black Hills Tennis Center. How long had you been thinking about that, opening your own facility?
You know, I thought it was the most wild, craziest dream. I actually thought about it in high school. And there was one guy, Bob Brandt, that was a tennis player that tried to get a bubble brought out to Rapid City to start with some indoor courts. But I knew at the time that I was at Arrowhead with the two courts. We only had two. Now, I thought I was in charge of tennis, so I tried to pass a 3 indoor court facility at Arrowhead. And the board of directors came out and said, "What are you doing? You're a tennis pro. You can't try to pass this through the country club. You know, you got to go through the board." And I read the bylaws and said all I had to do was get 25 people to sign a petition that we could vote on it. So I did, and they had to take it to a vote, and the board was so upset at me because they didn't want an indoor tennis center, but they had to vote on it. And at the time when we voted, I think it missed the passing by, like, I don't know, 10 votes or something. But the golfers didn't even show up to vote on it because they thought there's no way in heck a golf club is going to pass, you know, an indoor facility. Uh-huh. So then they wanted to fire me at that point after it didn't pass. And so then 3 years later, they said, "Okay, Daryl, you're going to pass an indoor again, and you're going to make it. We're going to make it where it's a $300,000 clubhouse expansion and a $200,000 golf course expansion. And you're going to do your $1 million indoor facility."
Oh.
So I was like, "Oh no, this is going to be really tough." And I think it's the same thing too. I just think the golfers didn't want it, but they didn't think it was going to pass. So we passed it by like 10 votes. So we built the indoor tennis center at Arrowhead, and I was there for probably 18 years. And then all of a sudden some of the members decided that their kids weren't getting as good as my kids were on the tennis court. And so they thought if we got rid of Daryl, he'd move out of town, and our kids would win state, and they'd be the best players.
Oh.
So the club spent probably, over a year trying to get rid of me, because everybody knew me and they wanted me, but these few people were trying to convince the golfers to get rid of me, and they just got a new general manager that was a bookkeeper, so she didn't know how to run the club, and she didn't know how to get rid of a pro. So they kept me on, and they were just dragging it and dragging it and dragging it. And I think we had close to 600 members. And then when they finally got rid of me, I think they got down to 330 members. I mean, I brought in 100 from Arrowhead to join my facility. A bunch of them died. A bunch of them quit because of all the commotion and the food issues. And so they were in trouble. But what happened was when they got rid of me, this Bob Brandt that I knew said, "You're going to build an indoor facility." And I'm like, "What are you talking about?" And he goes, "Yes." He said, "We're going to go out and find some land." So we found some land. We all of a sudden went to the SBA and I filled out all the paperwork. Nice to have accounting stuff at that point.
Yeah.
Yeah. And barely got it all set up, had a bank, put $200,000 in ground removal and starting to build it. And the bank that said that they would fund the loan said, oh, we got some Arrowhead members that don't want you to build this indoor. So I don't know if we can do the loan.
Oh.
And I'm like, oh boy, there's probably a lawsuit there. But I end up going to another bank, and the bank said, and the bank president was an ex-president of Arrowhead. And he said, sure. He said, we'll give you the loan. So we figured out the loan and put it together. And Bob Brandt was a builder for Gustafson Builders. So Bob got the building started and kept moving through it. And he knew what he wanted in his facility. So we ended up finishing it. And there it was, without, you know, a lot of to-do. We built the indoor facility. It was crazy.
You know, this is about the same time that your two kids, Whitney and Billy, were getting into high school and playing tennis. And, of course, they had very successful careers. They played at Rapid City Stevens. How involved were you with coaching Whitney and Billy?
Well, it was so nice because I tell everybody that you don't want to coach your kids. So I'd have a lot of pros working for me, and I would tell them what the kids should be doing and what, you know, how they should be playing their matches and so on. So it was kind of nice. But at Arrowhead, when I was there, I had built up such a staff of Stevens kids that would play all year long. So it was a no-brainer for them to win state, because we had this great group of kids that were all ready to excel and go full blast into the high school scene. So when I was at Arrowhead, we had all those kids, and they all played with Billy and Whitney. So they were all very, very good players. And so they had built in a bunch of kids that they could play with. Well, when I left Arrowhead, I took 100 of those Arrowhead members and took them over to my place to kind of make sure my facility would go.
Sure.
And then at the same time, we ended up bringing over some of the high school kids too. So then they had a lot of their friends still playing at my place, but a lot of them stayed at Arrowhead just because, you know, they wanted the Arrowhead scene with the golf and the clubhouse and the social stuff. So,
well, you saw about six straight years of watching Whitney and Billy perform at a pretty high level. Whitney would make it to the championship match in singles 3 years in a row. She would win two of them, along with a couple of doubles titles. And then Billy, he won three singles titles and five doubles titles. What were those years like for you?
Oh, it was so incredible to see them. They were just like machines. They would just go out there. They would never, you know, have any kind of fit or any kind of emotion. They just played and played and did what we taught them, is to keep the ball deep, keep it in play. And, you know, if you can run your opponent around, go to the net and put it away. And they were so smart. Whitney, as an eighth grader, won state. But as a ninth grader, she played a girl from Sioux Falls that was 19 years old. And her name was Veronica, and she ended up playing for Drake, I think. But she ended up beating Whitney. So Whitney lost that ninth grade year. Otherwise, she would have won four singles. And Billy winning five doubles, he was so short. And his partner was at times Corey Pollock, his cousin.
Right, that's so Darcy's son. Right, Darcy's
son. Yes, that's Darcy's son. So Corey was tall, and Billy was, you know, barely higher than the net. And so where would all the guys play as a seventh grader, or as an eighth grader when he won? Where would they all hit to? They'd hit to Billy. Well, Billy'd be just up to the net and just putting them away. and they didn't want to hit the Billy. Then they'd hit the Corey, and Corey would put them away. So it was incredible that he pulled off all 5 years of doubles. And again, his senior year, you know, Whitney kind of cruised. She had problems with the twins. I think 1 year may have split her finals, but Billy had match point against him a couple of times in one match when he was a senior. Here he's supposed to win it. He comes up and he goes, "Dad, you know, my stomach's not feeling very good. I really don't feel good." And it was right before his match. And we had worked so hard on overheads for both Billy and Whitney. And the guy ended up, Billy ended up running up to the net, and Billy had match point against him a couple of times, and he just slammed the ball, put it away like he had done all those previous years. So he pulled off those three wins. They both had three singles wins for state championships, which was pretty cool because they didn't have a lot of height or strength or anything. They were just fast and quick and hit so many balls that they knew what to do.
And, of course, went on to college and had some decent careers there. You know, the Pollock name, we mentioned early on, you know, your mom and dad and you and your six other siblings and some of their kids all winning titles, being a part of tennis. Your brother Duke, of course, won a singles title in 1979, a couple of runner-ups in doubles. By the way, I read a story about you and your brother Duke. While you were in college, you wanted to play a tennis tournament in Aberdeen. You remember that story?
I think so. Is that
the
that
one?
Is...
That one there, you went to play in a tournament, but it didn't really work out that way.
I think we ended up driving up to Canada or something.
That's right.
The wrong road.
That's
oh,
right.
Yeah.
You left Rapid City in Duke's Ford Pinto. You were going to go there and win a tennis tournament and win some money in Aberdeen, but you had a friend who was driving. You guys were sleeping, and when you woke up, you're in North Dakota.
Oh, yeah. Boy, do I remember that. And we got there, and it was like, geez, if you would have showed up, you would have made money right off the bat. And it was like we didn't have that many money tournaments, but yeah, it was crazy. It was crazy.
And then
where'd you get that story from, Duke?
A little birdie told me that one. It kind of reminds that that's a great story. A great story.
Oh yeah, that's a great story.
And then 1983, huge tennis event at the old Rapid City Civic Center. You know, he had tennis pros Peter Fleming and Roscoe Tanner were there. So was Virginia Wade and Billie Jean King. How did that event get to Rapid City? Because you were a part of it.
You know what? I had a friend, Dave Norby, who was a big lefty and a really good tennis player. And he never did play college tennis, but he just loved tennis. And he always told me, he said, "Daryl, I'm going to bring in some players to have this big exhibition." And I'm like, every year he's telling me this. And so I really don't believe that he's actually putting it on. But he went with Larry Graff, who was the park and rec director. And Larry Graff and him, Dave Norby, got together and paid all these bucks for these pros to come in. And Jimmy Arias was supposed to come in. And he probably looked at South Dakota and said, you know, he was probably like 17 years old at the time, really ranked highly. He probably said, "Well, I don't want to go out there. I'll just forfeit my $10,000. And so Peter Fleming jumped in and took his place. So we had Peter Fleming and Roscoe Tanner and Dave Norby set it up that we would play them. And he actually bet those guys that we would $100 that we'd win more than three games, and I think we may have won one or two games, and so he owed them money. But it was the most fun to be out there because Peter Fleming was McEnroe's doubles partner, and he was still one in the world in doubles. And Roscoe Tanner had the fastest serve at one point at 140,
that's right.
And he was a lefty, so he hit this slice that came up about 3 feet off the ground, really, really fast. And then you had Peter Fleming with a righty kick, and that thing would kick over your head. So you're returning one serve over your head and the other serve down by your ankles. And it was so much fun. I mean, Dave Northey had a big fashion show there, and he had a big get together afterwards with the pros. And yeah, it was really a totally enjoyable feat that he put together.
The Black Hills Tennis Center. What makes it the premier facility in the Black Hills today?
Well, it's open to the public, and we have kids that are 5 years old all the way up to 90 years old that come out and play, and we get a lot of people from out of town that jump in there. We have leagues, we have lessons, we have tournaments. So it's been a great, great facility for Rapid, and we actually had more indoor courts than Sioux Falls for many, many years. We had five courts with the three at Arrowhead and the four I built, and Arrowhead only had five indoor courts. So we were way ahead of Arrowhead for a while, and now that they built their big, monstrous Huther Tennis Center, they're finally ahead of us. But yeah, so it kept us in the ballpark range for high school tennis. We had matches with tournaments with top pros that came out and would play at Sioux Park, and then if it rained, they'd get to come in and play at our place. So it was a great melting point for good players and for people to come out and experience a lifetime sport.
Well, and for you, Daryl, you get your daughter, Whitney, who gets to work with you. How about that? She's a tennis pro for you, right?
Oh, yes. And so she ended up teaching for Vandermeer at Hilton Head. And then when her husband finished up his military career, he was a Naval Academy grad, and they decided to come back to Rapid City. And it was awesome because they have two beautiful little boys, and they can come to the tennis center and play. And Whitney moved over kind of where I live too, so she has a 5-minute drive to the tennis center, and it's worked out so well.
Awesome.
I mean, I couldn't have been blessed any better to have a pro that is so good and so much fun to work with.
2004, the South Dakota Tennis Hall of Fame awards their Tennis Achievement Award to the Joe and Minnie Pollock family. To Joe and Minnie and the seven kids, you know, what did that award mean to the family?
Well, it was so big for my parents to be out there and be with the group, because they have been supporting us from way back. I mean, with the college scene and everything else. And then all of the kids that are in my immediate family, their siblings, Dolly's two kids played college tennis. Dana's two kids played college tennis. Dixie's three boys played college tennis. Mm. And so they all got exposed. Donna's kids didn't play, and Duke's kids didn't play college, but they had other activities. But again, to have that award for the family was so much fun. Everybody made it out, and yeah, it was a great recognition that they have in Sioux Falls for the Hall of Fame. It's just so totally unbelievable that they put that together.
Daryl, 2009, you're inducted into the South Dakota Tennis Hall of Fame. What did that mean to you?
It was a great acknowledgement that the states saw that we had done a lot with putting together Arrowhead's indoor facility, for playing in all those tournaments over so many years, and keeping tennis afloat, building my indoor and promoting with the high school tennis and the high school activities. They come out and play when it's raining for the state tournament and for other tournaments too. So it was a very humble thing to have myself jump in there and put my face out there. And again, those guys in Sioux Falls, I just, Jamie Vollen and that whole group, so unreal with how they are keeping this tennis scene going.
2017, your brother Duke goes into the Tennis Hall of Fame. That's pretty impressive. All these Pollocks in the Hall of Fame, involved with tennis here in South Dakota. We talked about your mom and dad, Joe and Minnie, and of course your siblings are Dolly and Dixie and Donna and Duke and Darcy and Dana. You all played at Rapid City Central. Of course, you mentioned your dad had built those shelves for all those 500 trophies that you guys won in city and regional tennis tournaments. Where are all those trophies today?
Oh, I had them for so many years. And then I donated some to the boys club, and I still actually have some in the garage and some in the basement. And boy, it's hard to get rid of those.
Yeah,
when,
you can't get rid of them.
Yeah, I know. There's so many kids out there. So we've given them away over the years for the Arrowhead tournaments. Where I've had the plaques taken off and just a new plaque put on it, so everybody can still use our trophies. And I just remember my first one, that how valuable it was. So with these kids, I try to make sure that they can pull off one trophy. And when they do, I think they have tennis for life at that point, even though they might not play in high school or college, but they know they have it forever.
I got a couple more for you, Daryl. You know, you've kept tennis alive and well in Rapid City for your career since you were a kid. But you know what? Pickleball's getting pretty big now. How big is pickleball in the Black Hills?
Well, you know, it took probably 20 years for me to add some pickleball because the players would come in and say, oh, we can play free outside, so we just want to play at your facility. And I'm like, well, I got a lot of bills I got to pay here. I don't think you'll be playing indoor. But then within the last 3-4 years, I saw that the pickleball was kind of picking up a little bit. And so I would pick up a few nets and would put chalk lines on. And the chalk lines were, you know, were tough to keep on. And the tennis players didn't really like them that much. And so eventually what happened was I picked up a girl from Colorado Springs that had ran an indoor facility, pickleball facility out there. And she was kind of interested in continuing, and we have never filled up our tennis courts totally. And so I'm looking at this going, if I put in 4 pickleball courts on 1 tennis court, I have 16 people playing.
Uh-huh.
And if I have 2 courts with pickleball courts, I have 32 people playing at one time. And the other 2 courts are still open for tennis. So I added pickleball lines and roll out nets. So when they're not playing tennis, they're playing pickleball. And it's incredible because I never thought I would play. I'm like Nancy Ross saying, this is the goofiest sport ever in the world. And I want exercise, and I want to hit good ground strokes and topspin. But once I start playing and all these younger people wanted to beat me and I could slam the ball down their throat, it was just so addictive that I could go out there and play. And then when I would play pickleball and switch to tennis, my tennis was better. And I'm like, what is going on? Well, in tennis, you don't have as much time. In pickleball, you're really fast. In tennis, the ball will come over so slowly that I have time to set up and hit my strokes. So the tennis scene for me is still incredible. I still enjoy it. But to be able to go out there on one tennis court with 16 other players and slam balls down their throat is a great feeling for me, thinking that, you know, in tennis, I can beat most players, but, you know, someday I might not be moving as well as I am now, so the pickleball scene will be waiting for me full-time sometime down the road.
Daryl, have you ever thought about going back to when you were 14 and maybe you didn't want to check out any books for tennis? Maybe you didn't want to keep hitting that ball against the garage door at your home? Maybe you didn't want to do tennis? Where do you suppose you would have wound up today as?
You know, I could have been at the hospital for a lot of years doing dishes. I could have been at McDonald's, you know, working there. Because when you don't have a passion and you don't have something to work towards that you feel like you can accomplish something, your life is kind of like just so-so. So like a lot of my friends in the neighborhood in the Robbinsdale area, some of them got in trouble and some of them, you know, most of them didn't go to college. And, you know, it was so nice that I had that avenue and that motivation to figure out that there was something that I needed to do was a sport. And I knew it when I was in kindergarten, but I didn't find the sport until I was 14. But if I wouldn't have had anything, I could have been in big trouble along with the rest of the kids in the family, I'm sure too, because there were a lot of ways to get yourself in trouble back then.
In Play with Craig Maddock is made possible by Horton in Britain, where smiling at work happens all the time. Apply now at HortonWW.com. If you like what you're hearing, please give us a 5-star review wherever you get your podcast. It helps us gain new listeners. This has been In Play with me, Craig Maddock. This is a production of South Dakota Public Broadcasting.